generations of scientists in the room. We got Jack Juan Ura here, whose dad John is at the Ginning Lab in Lubbock, and whose father Don was at the 4th Street. Or what? I don't know where was it when he was there, but ARS. So we got three generations here. This is pretty cool. And Cotton. Good morning, everybody. Okay, Paul Funk, as I also want to acknowledge Dr. Robert Hardin. And Albert Trassis is a grad student who's been working with us for a couple years. Bobby did a good job with the justification. Fuel use is 6.5 to 8.5% of ginning costs, volatile prices. Propane's doubled in 10 years. We can't control that. And we can't control the weather. And we can't control then how much drying we're going to need. So as ginners, what can we do? After planted acreage, I think the biggest threat to profitability is variable cost. So can we improve the utilization of the energy? Dr. Hardin was looking at measuring this in a cotton ginning laboratory. This section of our collaborative research is reporting what we did when we went out in commercial gins and just measured fuel use efficiency. We covered most of the United States cotton ginning belt. And you'll see that, you know, half of this is centered around the Stoneville Lab. I think it's very important that we get some scientists in there as quickly as we can. Because it would be disruptive to the ginning process to break their fuel lines and put in meters while they're running, and it would be too expensive to install fuel meters for all burners in the 24 gins we went to, we decided that we'd use a surrogate for measuring fuel flow. And that surrogate is measuring the airflow and temperature change of the drying system. Velocity, pressure, and density gives us the velocity. The velocity and pipe diameter gives us the volumetric airflow. Volumetric airflow and air density gives us the mass flow. Mass flow times temperature change divided by burner efficiency gives us an estimate of how much fuel the burner was using. If you like the math, it'll be in the paper. Bottom line is, we put a lot of pitot tubes in a lot of gin pipes. And every once in a while, we get into a gin we were in last year, and the pitot tube station was gone because gin changed things. The pitot tube pressure was recorded by converting it through a current transmitter into milliamps per 4 to 20 milliamps, and then storing that in a hobo. Onset hobo data logger. Having a whole bucket load of these little data loggers was really cool because we could get them all synchronized. We didn't have to string wires anywhere. We'd just go out in the gin and set stuff up. And pretty much the timestamp in one data logger agreed with the timestamp in the next. To quantify the amount of drying that was done, we looked at bales per hour and turnout. In the case of the 24 gins we were in this year, we don't have that turnout yet. We're going to get that when they're done, and they have other things to worry about right now. And then looking at the change in moisture content and the mass flow, we can come up with how much water was evaporated. And knowing the enthalpy of vaporization gives us a benefit using the same units of kilowatts as the fuel use. And that means taking some samples, trying to do it safely. We came up with a half a coffee can on the end of a stick, a very sophisticated tool, or just grabbing it off the gin stand apron at the end of the drying system. Beneficial energy divided by total energy is an estimate of fuel use efficiency. What we're trying to do is find out what kind of gin layout and what kind of operating strategy gives us the best use of fuel. Then we can tell gins, okay, your neighbor down the road is doing something you're not doing that you might want to imitate. The next level of sophistication, we'd like to be able to say, you know, if you spend $5,000 on insulation, you can save that much money in the next two or three seasons. So that's where we're trying to head with this information. You go into a gin, you think you're going to be sampling at the little conveyor belt there, and the little conveyor belt's gone, and there's a hole in the ground, and there's a steady flow in the hole. Anyway, I don't know that I've ever been in a gin where they didn't change something from one year to the next. The pipes we thought we'd stick our pitot tubes in aren't there anymore because they got a new burner. So it's been fun. We've been in the same gins now for two seasons, and so we're seeing some differences in the weather. But I have to state up front that the difference from one season to the next is small compared to the differences between modules. Out in California, it was pretty much a wetter year. But with the exception of that, the third gin there in the middle, there was a lot of overlap within the moisture content coming into the gin. Our 30 samples in year 2016 and year 2017 overlapped in all four of the other gins. Texas was a little bit wetter going into it. Now, every chart you see, I put the same scale. We're looking at a dry basis moisture content of 4% to 12%. In Texas, we had half the gins were wetter and half the gins were drier, but with the exception of the third gin, there was overlap in every case. And we got to the Mid-South, same thing. We are in six gins out there, and every gin overlapped, except the fourth one in this case. And in the Southeast, again, a lot of overlap. Flipping-flopping from one season to the next. So variability between samples and between modules is more than between seasons. Our preliminary results are still quite rough. This young man, Albert, smart kid, he's been crunching the numbers for us. There's a lot of numbers to crunch. You got thousands of lines of data off these hobos and 30 samples from each side of each gin before and after each drying system. So it's a lot of information. We hope to have this plowed through in the next month or two. But I'll give you a rough idea of what it looks like. We can see that the drying system took about 1% of the moisture content out in the first stage and about 1% out in the second stage. This is kind of the expected, the normal, typical system. Of course, in a cotton gin, nothing's normal and expected. And we have drying systems where they don't have a burner. They just take the warm, moist air, skim it off. So the cotton goes out one side of the skimmer and the warm, moist air goes off the short radius. And they pick that cotton up after cleaning and take it to the next stage. And it actually, it can remove a half a percent of moisture with that saturated air. So it's not completely saturated. And that's kind of nice because you're not buying any fuel when you're reclaiming the air like that. Some gins, especially out west, will have three stages of drying. It was interesting to me to look at this gin because even without the burners running, they were experiencing some drying. This is just ambient air helping to take some moisture out. And it alerted me to the fact that ambient air conditions can be pretty significant. Here we see that there's a difference in efficiency between the first and second stages. First stage, 26% fuel use efficiency. That's pretty impressive. That's a little bit higher than most. And the second stage, we're in the same gin. Only about 15%. But it's not always that clear. We have some gins where the cotton's wetter after a drying system than it was when it went into it. One of the things that seems to really make a difference on drying fuel use is how much heat you lose in the pipe between the burner and the cotton pickup. And when we have a gin with a long pipe going through cold air, there's a lot of heat loss there, and we're not getting any benefit out of that. So if I could make one recommendation to a cotton ginner, it'd be get that burner as close to the pickup point as you can and insulate the pipe from the burner to the pickup. The other reason we might have seen high efficiency in the case of this gin wasn't just that they had short runs with insulated pipe, but also ambient air. If you have moist cotton and dry air, and you're picking it up, you don't even need any heat. You're going to see some drying just from that. So I don't believe these numbers. I don't think we ever are going to have a cotton gin drying system that's 55% efficient. I think we were enjoying the benefit of dry ambient air. The low-hanging fruit, the stuff that we can easily fix is, you know, if you don't need to do a lot of drying, turn the burner off. I think people know that. If you don't need a lot of drying, turn off the second stage. I think people already know that. Install a burner control. You know, it's amazing to me how many gins have sophisticated electronic controls for the drying systems, and they've turned it to manual. And I ask people, now, why is it on manual? Well, because it works. Okay. But if you're going to put in a system, follow the ASA standard. We have one. It tells you where to put the sensor locations. Insulate the hottest pieces of the system first. Hopefully I'll have some more detail to share next time we get together. But I'm open to questions now if anybody's got something.
Good job.
All right. Thank you, Stan.
Okay. Now that concludes our presentation. So, but we have now the student competition paper awards, and Bobby Harden will present those or
bring these up now. And so I guess Kelly, now we want to get a picture with the winners. So, right? Do we need to? If they're here.